Record. So this meeting will be recorded for posterity. So if you're thinking, I love that. If you're thinking anonymity, keep that in mind. My name's Joe and I'm an alcoholic. If you have any questions about the International Conference of Secular AA, just message Jerry B or me. We know everything you'll ever want to know, and then some. This sort of touring fiasco of a speaker meeting is something we decided to do just to have some fun in pandemic times. And we are going to be, we're here in Orlando for the day. We are going to South Africa in March. We are going to Montreal, Canada in April. We are going to London in May and Cottonwood, Arizona in June. Other dates are wide open. So if you're looking to host one, just email us at secularaa@gmail.com and we will make it so. So I am going to turn the meeting over to our Florida host, Mikey, and let's roll them. I'm going to mute all, Mikey. So you just, that's already done? Okay. So take it away, Mikey. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. My name is Mikey. I'm an alcoholic. First, I want to thank Joe for asking us to do this. It really is an honor for us. I'll give you a quick history of our group so we can get on to our speakers. And then I'm going to just touch a little bit on what makes our group different than other meetings. Like most meetings, it all started with a resentment. I had been sober for about 10 years when I discovered that I was an atheist. I never really believed in God, but I never thought about it really. And when it came to the steps or the God talk in the rooms, I just kind of ignored it. It was uncomfortable, but I just kind of put it in the background. But I happened to be browsing Reddit. And back then there was a sub, a default sub of atheism, and there were a whole bunch of memes with things like a picture of Jesus, and it had a caption that read, "Prayer, because I already know what you want. I just want to hear you beg for it." And they were funny, but they made me think. And about after a week of that, I started to question Christianity rather than God. And I was able to put a name to that uncomfortable feeling that I had, and it felt good. It felt like like a little piece of me had been unlocked. Anyway, I went to my home group, and I mentioned in one of my shares that I was an atheist, and that did not go over well at all, to say the least. I'd been with my home group for about 8 years, and my closest friends were there. They were my entire support network. So it was a real shock to me when people started distancing themselves from me. And like I said, things like the We Agnostics chapter never used to bother me really, so I never said anything about it. But when I realized that that entire chapter is just full of bad arguments, basically, I started to say something about it. And again, to make a long story short, not only did I basically lose all of my friends, I seemed to be an outcast in AA all of a sudden. And it pissed me off so much that I started Oh My God in order to stay in AA. Our group's name is our mostly agnostic group of drunks, the acronym being Oh My God. I'll tell you about that name. Like I said, I was very involved with AA prior to me coming out as an atheist, so I knew who I needed to talk to and what I needed to do in order to get a group going. So I filled out all the paperwork, got our service number from AA World Services, and then I called our local intergroup office to get our meeting in the meeting list. Now, originally, I wanted to call the group of drunks, which is what they tell you if you have a problem with the God word. They say, "Oh, just think of it as a group of drunks," or "good orderly direction." And I thought it was a clever name, but I wanted to make sure that people knew it was a non-God meeting. So I asked if they could put mostly agnostic in parentheses next to the name. And I was kind of surprised when they wouldn't do it. I knew it was bullshit because they did it to my home group. They had the name of my home group, Welcome or Wake Up Call. And then next to it, it said mostly gay. And they do that for two reasons. One, so gay people can find the meeting they need to go to. But two, and the real reason, is to warn people that it's a gay meeting. They don't walk in and, oh, everyone's here, sister. So I knew that they would do it. So I, or they wouldn't do it. So I called them back about a week later. And I told them that the name of our group was Our Mostly Agnostic Group of Drunks, which they approved. And I didn't even think of the acronym that made until later. I'll tell you why our group is a bit different from most groups. First of all, I learned a valuable lesson right at the beginning. Once the group started, getting people to show up, which, by the way, was one of the benefits of having the word agnostic in our name. People picked up on it like really quick. When I wrote the script for the meeting, I added a disclaimer right at the beginning that said, we are not here to bash religion or AA as a whole, but we're also not here to proselytize or convert anyone. So please respect that. And that was a big mistake because it brought that topic up at the beginning of the meeting. And that's what most of the meetings turned into. In fact, we talked about God more than regular meetings, and it got pretty toxic. So the solution was to take any reference about gods or atheism or agnosticism out of the script, as well as keeping God out of any of the topics that we'd bring up. And it took a while, but it worked. It's also become one of our kind of guiding principles. We just don't bring it up. In fact, the only time we mention anything about that is when we start the meeting with welcome to our mostly agnostic group of drunks at the beginning. We also make our topics totally secular. There's plenty of topics to talk about without bringing up God. So we're basically just a good AA meeting where that topic doesn't come up much. Sometimes people need to talk about their disbelief and the struggles they have with the God word in traditional meetings. If it comes up in a share in the meeting, we definitely talk about it, but I wanted to address it directly. So I searched the internet and mistakenly found that secular AA meetings were already a thing. I didn't know that for like the first 6 months. Anyway, I found a good Q&A about secular AA online. So I printed a bunch of them out and created welcome packets to give to the newcomers and visitors that they could take home and read. The focus of our group is on newcomers and visitors, and that's really worked well for us. That brings me to the second thing that makes us stand out. Even though we're an official AA meeting, we also have a sense of humor, and we try to be as non-traditional as we can within the group. We add jokes to the script. We have a giant spin wheel with all our topics written on them, and we're about as irreverent as you can get when it comes to being in our meeting. The third thing that makes us different is we have something called the Recovery Expansion Project, which is where we all invade a regular AA meeting together so our members can like branch out into traditional AA. I even made giant posters of other meetings, like previews that we put up in the meeting space. I got sober in traditional AA, and since there's only one secular meeting in town, ours, I wanted people to know that you can go to traditional meetings and still find recovery. We go as a group for two reasons. The first is to answer questions and provide support if the meeting goes off the rails about God. And the second is to show traditional AA members that we're not all baby-eating heathens, although there's nothing like a nice toddler for breakfast. Another part of the Recovery Expansion Project is our activities like bowling or miniature golf. We're in Orlando, Florida, so there's a ton of things to do. It also allows us to show newcomers that you can have fun in AA without turning into a nerd. If you haven't been to our online meeting, you really should check it out. We have sound effects and graphics to make it fun, which comes from me working at Disney for so long. I'm big on attention to detail. And basically, that's the history of our group in a nutshell. We got two speakers for you tonight, one with under 5 years and one with over 10 years. I think Jeremy has 16 and Andy has two. So we're going to start with Andy. Andy has become a real friend to me. That's one thing that AA has given me is real friends. I'm real excited to hear what he has to say. So Andy, take it away.
Thanks, Mikey. Appreciate the kind intro for me. And Joe, thank you for inviting us to talk. And I learned a lot about Oh My God just in that little description that I didn't know. I'm Andy. I'm an alcoholic. I live here in Orlando, Florida. And my sobriety date is January 15th of 2019. I have since the Disney backgrounds were up today, I figured I'd hit on some of my favorite Disney memories, because Disney is part of my story. But I'll start a little bit back further than that. My first time I ever drank, I was 13 years old, and I stole alcohol from my sister, who had stolen it from a store where we lived in upstate New York. Ran away, hid it, and drank it on my own. And that pretty much started, I was already stealing stuff at that point. So I'd already hit a number of things that a lot of people in the program struggle with early in life. And then I drank relatively normally through high school. I got to college, and I went to college at a liberal arts school in the middle of Pennsylvania. And by the time I had hit December of my freshman year, I was a full-blown alcoholic. Had a pretty good feeling. I knew I was a full-blown alcoholic. I was also a Division I athlete on a scholarship, so I had to balance those two things, which was a struggle for a lot of my time in college, where my alcoholism often turned out to be the winner of that struggle. It was very hard to make morning weight room workouts and things like that when I was coming off a good night. I saw the sun come up many times. But that was, I thought it was a phase, and frankly, I really enjoyed it. I got out of college, I went to law school, and I stayed sober for a year. And, people talk about being a dry drunk. I didn't stay sober for a year. I drank on the weekends then, but, I had some roommates there that I can fully attest to with what a jerk I was. I was very hard on people. I was very short with people. I was living in Washington, D.C. at that point, and with a bunch of guys I knew from college. They were still out doing their thing, and my response to them being able to do their thing while I had to stay and study was horrific. Number of fights, harsh words, all kinds of fun lashing out, because I as one of my friends in the program would say, I had my baba taken away from me, and I no longer could have alcohol to rely on as a crutch. Met my wife shortly, or during law school, not shortly thereafter, got married shortly. My wife is on the Zoom call today, so you can all wave to Randy. She's delightful. One of us. We started going to Disney World. We went on our honeymoon, and boy, I liked Disney World. There was this park called Epcot, and you see the Epcot ball behind me on my background, and there were various restaurants and bars that where you could walk around, and they had drinking around the world. Well, drinking around the world is what amateurs do, frankly. I could do drinking around the world in my sleep. There were only, I think there's 9 countries. That's funny. I don't even know exactly how many there are. But we started with drinking around the world, and we'd come to Epcot and places, other places at Disney periodically. Did that. Eventually by 2012, we moved down here. Well, you know, most people at that point they go to Disney to see Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck. I went to see Carl, who worked in Epcot, at the UK Pavilion, who was my bartender there, or Gavin was there sometimes too. I had Tammy and Sheila at Meisner's Lounge in the Grand Floridian Hotel. We were talking about the Canadians coming down to Florida and going to the water parks in the winter. Well, I went to the water parks in the winter too, because I went to Blizzard Beach because Jose would be there at the bar, and they had chairs, and I could pass out in the chairs after I had a few rum runners and then drive home. And for me, that was just a lot of fun. My story is a little different than some in the respect that nothing ever happened to me because of my drinking. I never got a DUI. I never lost a job. I bought a house during my drinking. I got married drinking. I got the day before I checked into detox. I got my performance review finalized for 2018 year, where I got the best performance review I'd ever had in my career at work. And then I went to detox the next day. And it's just funny. I was cleaning my office over this weekend and I was looking at notes. I was working on a very large transaction. I'm a lawyer and I do commercial real estate work. And I was working on a very large transaction and I found these notes from late 2018 when I was kind of at the pit of my drinking. And you couldn't read them essentially. It was just like big scratches on a piece of paper. So how I got my best performance review, I have no idea. But as things morphed into, we moved around frequently from 2012 on. I lived in Singapore for a few years. Randy lived here. We lived in Washington, D.C. for a year. We'd historically been in Washington, but we moved from there to here in Orlando, back to Washington, to Miami, back to here. Quite a bit of crazy stuff going on. Not avoiding anything, but more trying to find a place where I was comfortable and where I felt like I should be and where I felt like I belonged with the people I was with. And that was a real struggle for me. I always was a guy who drank at bars and I always had a lot of friends when I was drinking, but I never had people that I was particularly close to or that I could confide in and get real advice from outside of my workplace where I had wonderful relationships with folks I worked with that were very beneficial to me, but I was hiding my drinking from them the entire time. So by 2016, 2017, I was drinking essentially all day, every day. In the middle of 2018, I started to hit the hospital periodically as I had restless leg syndrome, which was getting really, really bad. It turns out as soon as I stopped drinking and stopped having DTs, I no longer had restless leg syndrome. It was really a miracle that could happen. I started coming to AA in December of 2018. And I couldn't, at that point, I was just done. I have to read the paragraph. It's on page 152 of the big book. And it's the last couple of sentences in the paragraph on the carryover. And it says, "He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end." And for me, that was it. At that point, I was 43 years old. I had been drinking alcoholically for 25 years. My entire life was structured around drinking. All my friends drank. All my friends drank extensively. I really had no desire to continue drinking at that point, but at the same time, I had no frame of reference for what a life would be without alcohol. I did not know anyone who lived a life without alcohol other than my parents, and their life wasn't the life I wanted. So I messed around for about nine months. I don't know. It was a while. I was seeing a therapist who I was lying to about my alcohol consumption, suggested I go to AA. I said, "I don't like to go to AA because that's a God program and I don't believe in God." The therapist said, "Well, you should try it anyway." And I said, "Yeah, that's an idea," and never did anything about it. Finally, I got the desire to come into the rooms, and I couldn't get sober because I couldn't stop drinking. At that point, I'd been drinking basically all day for a while. And when I say all day, I'd wake up at 2 a.m. and have a drink. I'd have a drink as soon as I got up in the morning, all that sort of thing. And I met some folks. I went into traditional AA initially, and I met some folks, and at that point I was willing to do, I don't say willing to do anything because if they'd asked me to go out and execute people in the parking lot, I wouldn't have done that to get sober. I was willing to do what was reasonably necessary to get sober. But I had the nasty problem of I really couldn't safely stop drinking, and I had two significant transactions to close in early January of 2019. So I kind of messed around in the rooms and met some people and saw that they were happy that they'd done the program. And some of them didn't believe in God, which was a tremendous help. And one of the people I met was Mikey's sponsor, who got me in touch with Mikey, who helped me some at that point. And eventually I got into a detox on January 14th of 2019, and then have been sober since then. Now that's also the date. January 15th is the date that I'm just as proud of. It's the last day I threw up. I threw up every single day for like a year and a half. And that was not having to do that anymore was a great relief. Like I said, I got into the program and I was in traditional AA, which was a little bit of a challenge for me, but I was lucky. I hear stories about folks who have God and Christianity largely forced upon them. That wasn't my experience at all. I had a number of people in the room who were helpful and very open in what their beliefs were. I certainly had a few people who challenged my non-belief in God early on, but I'm very hard-headed in a lot of degrees. But you know, I knew the first step for me was tremendously easy. I knew when I was 18 years old that I was powerless over alcohol, and it was 25 years later that I came into the room. The piece for me on that step was the unmanageability of my life. And it was only really when I started drinking every day and felt that my job was in jeopardy that I finally did feel my life to be unmanageable. I'd thrown away an awful lot of other things. I'd thrown away relationships. I'd burned a tremendous amount of personal capital with others. And none of those things seemed to affect me. But when it started to, at least in my mind, threaten my job, it was finally the straw that broke the camel's back for me. And the second step as I came into the rooms was relatively simple too. It was, you know, people would say, oh, well, just make the doorknob your higher power. And I have to admit, I didn't hear it at the time, but since then I've heard a great line. It's, I was going to make a doorknob my higher power, but it turned on me. And that's from someone who comes to Omegad quite a bit. And his name is Grizz. And I have to give him full credit for that one because I love it. And my higher power never was and never will be anything other than the fact that I needed to quit drinking. I knew that when I walked into the rooms. And I had, on my own, absolutely no way of quitting drinking, because I had never really tried on my own, or if I had, I guess I had tried, but I had absolutely no ability to do that. To me, my higher power that in that second step, that power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity in that second step, that was, I could look around the room and see a bunch of people who were sober. I didn't have that in my life. I'd never seen that in my life in 20 plus years. I didn't know sober people, and all of a sudden I did. So to me, something was going on there. And then, you know, so many people struggle, both who are atheist, agnostic, former believers, current believers, and, you know, turning their lives over to a higher power. A friend of mine I was fortunate enough, he described it to me as, keep going with the program. That was his suggestion on the third step, and that stuck with me, and it resonated with me at the time also, was you've seen these people who did this program and they're happy, some of them. They're all sober. A lot of them, and particularly the group I go to, has a lot of old sobriety in it. 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And you could see that, you know, those people had generally good lives. It's like any other program. There's some people where you look at them and you think, if that's what I'm going to be like sober, I don't know if I want to be sober. But that's not, you know, that's not the bulk of the people you run into, or at least my experience is you run into in the program. So when he said to me that, you know, just keep going, it was an important revelation to me that was all I needed to do at that point, because the sole thing I did need was to be relieved of my drinking and my desire to continue drinking. And frankly, I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to do a fourth step. I definitely didn't want to do a fifth step. Neither of those looked very appetizing to me, but I did keep going. I had a sponsor who, very ironically, my sponsor is a very devout religious person. But he was an excellent, excellent sponsor who simply, our discussions around religion were, you don't believe, that's fine. How can we get you sober? And how can we keep you sober? And what are the mechanics here to do this fourth step and this fifth step? And, you know, he had a good understanding of the big book, and he helped me. And he also put me in touch with other people who understood the fourth step and the four columns and developing all of the items that would later come into my character defects. And yeah, I was an asshole. Everybody was an asshole I've ever run into who's probably ever done a fourth step. It's not your best day. It's you know, it's tough. And as I went through my fourth step, it wasn't the last 10 years. It was one of the first people on my list was a janitor at an elementary school who had yelled at me when I was probably 4 years old. So I'd harbored a resentment against him for 39 years at that point. I had college professors on there who I'd graduated 25 years before that. That was bad. There were a lot of people I had not left much in the past, and that had weighed me down, and that had made me look to alcohol for a long time to solve the pain of those people who I had resentments against, who I thought had wronged me. And that was a hard piece of it for me. You know, the fifth step for me was the fifth step. I'm a lawyer, so I'm going to give you non-legal advice, but this is, don't, if you did anything illegal, don't tell your sponsor. Go find a therapist or a lawyer or a priest and confess it to them, because it's protected by the priest penitent or the doctor client or the attorney client privilege. Don't tell your sponsor. Your sponsor shouldn't want to know it either, because they can get pulled into court. So that, you know, yeah, you look like a jerk. You were a jerk. So live with it and get that stuff in the past and move on was my, I was a jerk, and I needed to get rid of it. And when I got rid of it, I did feel a lot freer. I've gotten further into sobriety. The sixth and the seventh step have really taken over the biggest bulk of what I do now on a day-to-day basis. The sixth step is essentially the way I was taught to do it, was to take my fourth and fifth step list and pull out the character defects that are in it. And I had a lot, so I tend to focus on the top ones. But part of the way I work with the 12th step is practicing the principles in all our affairs. And, that to me is taking those character defects in the sixth and the seventh step, pairing them with what I need to do every single day to try to get rid of them. I'm a liar. I have to be honest. I'm incredibly selfish. What's mine is mine. What's yours is mine. I have to be generous to people. I have to help them. I have to give to people. I'm deathly afraid of the world and losing what I have. So I have to go out and experience things, even if there's risk. I'm incredibly jealous of other people and their skills, and I try to tear them down because of that. So I have to be, it's another frame of generosity. I look at it and I'm arrogant and self-centered, unsurprisingly for any of you who know me. You've given me time to speak today, and I could certainly fill an hour talking about my favorite subject, which is myself. But I can see those things now. I'm not perfect on dealing with them, but I'm better. I've worked very hard on focusing on those things every day. I have lists in places I can see around my house where I look at, what behavior should I be modeling? Honesty, lovingness, kindness, generosity, those sorts of things. So I can walk through those reminders on a day-to-day basis. And then, the eighth, I went out and I did my amends, and I have a lot of living amends, but just to talk about that for a moment. One of the things that the promises are there. And when you're sitting, for me, when I was sitting there doing my work, I just didn't see the promises, any of them happening to me. I saw people around the rooms who had gotten some of the promises, but I didn't feel like any of them were happening in my world. Ironically, one of the ways I've seen the promises the most is by having a spouse in the rooms. I can see them coming true in her regularly on a day-to-day basis, which makes me look at myself and say, oh, wow. You've done better on that also. I tend not to give myself much credit for anything. So that's been one place where I've been able to see that in someone else who I know very closely, that's been able to give myself some credit for the things that I've seen as a result of working the steps, which I'm really grateful for that experience, which is a little bit unique in our circumstance. Mikey's gotten me into meditation, which frankly, in the COVID world has been a godsend. It's given me some peace of mind. And one of the things I talk about it a lot in meetings is I call it the concept of space. When I came into the rooms, my mind was a jumble. It was firing stuff back and forth like a pong game or something in my head. And as I got sober, things started to slow down, which gave me a little bit of space to have a little bit of introspection on what I'm doing. And meditation has taken that to a much higher level. It's given me real time to think about things and try to set some goals and things I want to do with my program, with my life. A friend of mine says, AA's taught him how to live in the real world. And that's my goal, is I want to be back into society as a person who can function there without alcohol. I had some, I just feel like that's where I want to be. And having the space to work on doing that because of not being drunk all the time, having the support network in the rooms having worked the steps to get rid of the baggage of the past. And then when I add the meditation to it, it seems to be working very well for me, and I'll continue to work on those, see what I can grow there. Anyway, as much as I'd love to continue talking about myself, we need to hear from Jeremy, who has a great story. So over to Jeremy.
All right, do I just jump in there? Just get started?
Now, I'm going to introduce you.
Okay.
Ladies and Jeremy, ladies and Jeremy. I forgot to talk about our website as one of the things that make us different, but y'all can check that out for yourselves. Jeremy has also become a good friend. He is, if you want to have a debate about religion, he's the person to go to. But he's may look a little rough, but he's a darling. let me go ahead and turn it over to Jeremy. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Thanks, Mikey. I know I look a little rough. I mean, I'm doing my best tourist impersonation, but I appreciate that. All right, I'm Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic. My story is going to be a little less chronological and pragmatic than Andy's. Mine's centered more around emotions and feelings. I guess that's the philosopher in me. For me, the reason that I drank, the reason that I used anything for that matter, from food to drugs to alcohol to sex, whatever, it was to shield me from feelings that I didn't like. I wanted to feel different, right? And that desire has been there for as long as I can remember. I feel like most of society, not just alcoholics, have a version of that, right? We have a thing that we don't feel great about, that makes us feel less than, that makes us feel insecure, and we want to cover that, we want to hide that, we want to make that go away. You know, for me, it was, you know, I was always kind of a fat kid. I was always kind of worried that that no one would love me, that no one would be attracted to me. And I had those insecurities about as long as I can remember. I mean, they were deep seated. And the thing about those types of insecurities is they don't respond to reason. They don't respond to evidence. So, you know, even as I sit here today at 41, having had a long and sordid relationship past, I still struggle, you know, with those feelings that I'm going to be alone, that I'm not worthy of love. And so when I drink, it's not that those feelings go away, but I can ignore them for a little while. So, you know, for me, the first time, you know, I drank, I was 15, I was at a wedding, and had a few drinks, you know, getting fed from the groomsmen, and started dancing with this girl at the wedding, started flirting with her. I think we may have kissed. I honestly don't remember. I'd say you'd think I would, but I was drunk, so maybe not. And it was, in my young life, it was just this pivotal moment, you know, and I remember going into school the next week and telling friends of mine that I wanted to be drunk all the time. Not realizing, you know, what the precursor that I was describing for the rest of my life. But I did. The feeling that I had, that I wasn't afraid. I wasn't worried. I wasn't obsessing over how do I look and does she like me, right? I was just reacting. I was living in the moment. And it changed the trajectory of my life. From that point on, I wanted to be drunk as often as possible. You know, I don't feel like in high school I was, I don't know, I don't think I got fucked up more than most people, but I definitely drank to excess frequently. And for me, the way that my addiction developed and changed and got stronger over time, it was always tied to, essentially, to women. It was always tied to feelings of not being good enough, of not being confident enough in my ability to warrant love. I heard this said early on at a conference that I attended in early sobriety, that it wasn't so much that I cared what you thought, but it's what I thought I cared what you thought. And I feel like that one really, it hit me when I heard it, because I felt like it described me really well in those situations, right? Even going into the bar, you know, the difference between what I thought minute one, when I hadn't had a couple drinks, to what I thought minute 30 were night and day. When I walked in, I cared what I thought you thought of me. I cared about what those pretty girls in the corner, what I thought they thought of me. I cared about the people having more fun than I thought I was having. And when I had enough drinks, I didn't give a fuck about any of that. I didn't care anymore. And that was so empowering. Sorry, kind of got out of chronological order. Like I said, I'm not a lawyer, so you'll have to forgive the lack of discipline in the share. So, you know, first breakup, this was, you know, high school girlfriend, into college, you know, first love, all that. And I started to really kind of struggle at that point with being able to fall asleep at night. You know, I've heard a version of this story from a lot of people in the program about how they started drinking daily or regularly because they couldn't fall asleep. And so for me, you know, I was going through a little bit of depression, and I couldn't, I'd close my eyes at night and it's all I would think about, and I couldn't fall asleep. So that's when I began to drink every night, a six pack every night, which at the time felt like a lot. In hindsight, it was nothing, but that's when that habit began of kind of needing alcohol for more than just to make me feel good. There was an added component of it to where I almost felt like I needed it to fall asleep for my own, you know, health even. It's complete bullshit looking back on it, but that's sort of how I started to feel about it. This is something I need in order to survive. You know, and during that breakup, like I said, I started drinking more and more than I ever had. But of course, as soon as I got another girlfriend, those feelings subsided. And this is again, kind of been the cycle of my entire addiction. Even today, I struggle with it. But so the next time, you know, same kind of thing, dating someone, feel good about myself. We break up, everything goes to shit. I start drinking more and more. I don't believe after her, I started smoking weed. I mean, I had smoked in high school, but nothing seriously. Yes, I'm going to discuss non-conference approved substances in this meeting, so hopefully you guys don't get too offended by that. I know sometimes the delicate sensibilities of alcoholics can be easily offended. Yes, that was a sideways shot at some of you. Anyway, so I started smoking marijuana. You know, I don't know. I don't know that I ever used it addictively. I mean, I smoked it every day, so probably, but it wasn't something I felt like I had to have, but it was really the first time I was kind of regularly using substances outside of alcohol. And of course, another girl, all those things sort of subsided. We break up, and now we introduce cocaine into the mix, which, by the way, I fucking loved. I mean, like, I don't know. I know we're probably not supposed to look back longingly on some of these things, but I enjoyed the shit out of that. But now we've added harder drugs. Again, same cycle, you know, dating this person, that ends. And at one point, you know, I ended up even, you know, smoking crack for a while. And that was the one that truly scared me, for obvious reasons, right? And a lot of friends of mine from back in upstate New York would call me and try to kind of reason with me, and it's kind of funny in hindsight to remember the conversations that I had with these people. Really, they didn't offer many good arguments besides, what the fuck are you doing? You know, what's wrong with you? And, but that one I actually quit, on a New Year's resolution, which, you know, super easy to do, but it convinced me that I had control of substances. That was the real downside to that, is that it let me look at my drinking and say, well, hey, at least it's not crack. And also it let me say, well, I quit that. I can probably quit this at any time too. So my drinking intensified, you know, it got to the point where it was nothing for me to, you know, knock back 40, 50 drinks in a night, on a Tuesday. And it just, it was the entirety of my existence. you know, I'm not one of those people who describes how awful things were when they came in, because I'll be honest, for the most part, I had fun. There was plenty of shit I got into. I did wreck cars. I never got a DUI, but I did wreck cars. You know, I did have jobs that suffered because of my alcohol use. So I wasn't free of all the consequences of alcoholism. But for the most part, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed getting fucked up. I enjoyed the feelings. I didn't enjoy the trouble I got into, but you know, it was worth the risk for me. And then at some point, my then girlfriend, eventually wife, but now ex-wife, she challenged me on my drinking, said I drank too much. I got really angry at her for saying that, but that's when I started to control it. And by controlling it, that means I only drank, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week instead of 7. And on those nights, of course, I got absolutely belligerently drunk, but that was me controlling it. Eventually, because I was a morally bankrupt person, I tried to cheat on her with people I was meeting online on Craigslist, and she found the evidence of that. And this is how I came in the room. She challenged me on that, kicked me out of the house, and quite frankly, I needed a Hail Mary. I needed something that showed, you know, how contrite I was. I needed something that showed some grand gesture. And, you know, I went to see a therapist a day or two later, and within 5 minutes, she said, you know, you're an alcoholic, which, oddly enough, shocked me. I was surprised by that news. And so I made it about the alcohol. I didn't make it about the attempted infidelity. I didn't make it about any of that. I made it about the alcohol. I went to AA. And I feel to this day incredibly lucky that it stuck. You know, we talk about the gift of desperation. It wasn't that I doubted that I needed to quit drinking. I had known that for years. But I sometimes just don't feel like I had that level of despair that I see so frequently with people coming in. And I like to say this because I think there are other people that come in and wonder, has it gotten bad enough? You know, is there more consequences I need to suffer before I'm ready to do this? The answer is no. You know, the bottom is when you stop digging. My bottom could have been worse. It also could have been a lot better. But because I was committed to giving this a genuine shot and kind of waiting back and looking for the evidence, you know, this worked. The evidence is what convinced me that this would work. Because after several months, my life was just dramatically better. In every single way, it was better. My decisions were better. I was thinking more clearly. And so I kept coming back. And you know, it's funny, you know, I use those phrases now and they mean something to me. And when I would hear them in the beginning, they didn't. You know, when they would say to me, keep coming back, I'd be like, eh, whatever. But now I understand the strength in that statement. So, you know, when I came into the program, my first sponsor, quite thankfully, was very kind. And I didn't think that's what I needed. I thought I needed someone a little firmer that would kind of call me on my bullshit. But he taught me a lot. But the one thing he taught me that really stays with me, and I say it a lot, is to handle things with love, is to approach situations, problems, even with, you know, people you don't know, and to essentially ask yourself, what would the loving version of Jeremy do here? How would he approach this? And I have yet to find a situation where the answer I reach from asking that question is the wrong one. Maybe someday I will, but to this point I haven't. And I'm incredibly grateful to him, you know, for that little piece of wisdom that I continue to use, you know, years and years later. I also got sober in traditional AA. Just like Mikey, I did my best to do the God thing. You know, I was raised in the church. I joined the debate team in high school and went on to get a philosophy degree. And all of these things I did, essentially searching for the answer to, is there a God? And I don't want to spoil the ending for you, but you're not gonna find him in the philosophy text. He's not there. Really could have saved a lot of money with that answer, but whatever. You know, I talked to priests and pastors, and I was really hungry to satisfy my intellectual need for proof, and I never found it. But that didn't stop me from early on in the program doing my best to do what I very much knew how to do, because I was raised in it. That was praying, and that was even trying going back to church. There were intellectual, you know, inconsistencies there that bothered me, but I managed to sort of convince myself that it was okay. And I'm really grateful that I managed to stay sober through all of that. And after about 4 or 5 years in the program, you know, I was at a somewhat similar experience to Mikey, but for me, it was, I was actually watching Sam Harris videos of him debating people. And I couldn't disagree with a single thing he said. It wasn't a single thing he said that in any way I disagreed with. And it sort of took me down a rabbit hole. And when I came out the other side, I was perfectly comfortable saying out loud what I had already felt and thought for, at this point, Jesus, 15, 20 years, which is that I don't believe in this. I don't. And it led me toward searching for other like-minded people, which eventually led me to Oh My God. And that meeting has had a profound impact on my sobriety. You know, Mikey talked about the importance of traditional meetings, because we are at this time the only secular meeting in Central Florida, or at least in Orlando. And while I completely agree with him, I will admit that I struggle. I still struggle at traditional meetings at times. That doesn't stop me from attending. It doesn't stop me from going and trying to get that morsel of wisdom that I needed to hear out of those meetings. But the last time I attended a traditional face-to-face meeting, the topic actually was God. And it, man, it was like an hour and a half of torture. But I look back at that experience, which wasn't that long ago. And I say that I look at it and I think, you know, I really could have handled things differently. I could have thought differently. I could have approached that differently. But it does also tell me that I still have a long way to go. Because for me, embracing, you know, secular AA, embracing agnosticism or whatever it is, atheism that you choose to subscribe to, does not mean that you have to despise, hate, be angry at the opposite. I don't think that is a sign of a well-adjusted, sober person like all of us here clearly are. So for me, you know I have a lot of work to do. I know that I'm still far from a finished product. That lesson continues to strike me repeatedly. You know, this past year and a half, I went through a divorce, and it was easily the most difficult year and a half I've ever had in, well, life in general, but also specifically tied to sobriety. You know, I was closer to drinking this past year and a half than I've been at any other point. And man, is that a terrifying and sobering reminder that this shit doesn't go away. That there are things that we can do to help, but that this is something that I will always in some way, shape or form have to manage. I also know with zero uncertainty that if it were not for AA, if it were not for Oh My God, if it were not for the people in that program, that I without question would have drank, that I would have probably made some truly terrible decisions. You know, I was able to lean into the program, and I'm grateful that is my answer today. When I have something that I can't get over, when I have something that I'm really struggling with, my answer now is immediately to turn to the program, and I find the support that I need in the program. And that's, to have that as an instinct speaks volumes of the power of what this program has done for me. And so, you know, that's, I'm not sure how long I went on for. I think I'm probably about good. There are different versions of my story that I get into. This one, I, you know, chose to focus a little bit more on kind of the God aspect. I don't always do that, but given that this is a secular conference, I felt the need to do that. But anyway, I will close by going on a small little rant that I like to close with, which is emphasizing service work, emphasizing how important it is for people to give back to this program. I think it is incumbent on everyone that is sober in this program as a result of this program to give back to it. If you are sober and have been sober for some time, you should try sponsorship. No one knows how to sponsor until they've done it. And when I hear people with years of sobriety, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, say, I'm just not comfortable or ready yet, quite frankly, it pisses me off. Your job is to give back. That's why we do this. And with that, I'll close.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy. That was awesome. Thanks, folks. I'll turn it back to Joe.
Thanks very much. Oh my God. We'll just go to a show of hands just to take us out. Anyone who's got something to add or something to say, we'd love to hear from you. Let's kick off with Judy. You're still muted, Judy.
Hi, I'm Judy, marijuana addict from North Carolina. And I just wanted to say thank you both. I wanted to comment on the promises that Chris said. When I was working the steps, I got so mad at the promises because the promises weren't coming true. And I got mad at AA in general and my sponsor specifically. And but I kept with it and I pushed through and I figured out why they call it the ninth step promises. You have to get to the ninth step before they start coming true, or they did for me anyway. So this program really worked for me, and none of the religious programs did. My sponsor insisted that I go to lots of regular AA programs and just take what I wanted and leave the rest. But it was so exhausting to translate and so personally irritating. I'm a third generation Unitarian and definitely an atheist. So let's see, I wanted to say that religion does not have a monopoly on morality. And thank you for letting me share tonight. And thank you both again. Andy and Jeremy and Chris, all you guys, it's just been such a pleasure, and I'm so happy to be sober.
Thanks, Judy.
That was fabulous, short, sweet, and absolutely beautiful. Allie from New York.
Hey guys, I'm Allie. I'm an alcoholic. I will also try to keep it short and sweet. Thank you, Andy and Jeremy, so much for sharing your stories. Jeremy, I have a bad habit of where I'm always, when I'm at these meetings, I always have to be doing something else with my hands or whatever. So I was crocheting. And when you started your story, just the things that you were saying, I just stopped everything I was doing and was enraptured, because I just related so much to a lot of it. I had, very low self-esteem, especially when I was younger. I never, drinking made me feel popular. It made me feel cool. It was the only time that I would really get attention from members of the opposite sex. And then as I got older, it just every relationship, just kind of the ups and downs, like you were talking about, when I was in a relationship, things were good and then things would fall apart and immediately, my drinking would just escalate and get that much worse. And my self-esteem just kept getting lower and lower and plummeting to the point where before, this most me getting sober most recently, I didn't think I was a piece of shit. Like, I absolutely was a piece of shit. I never was going to find anyone. I was never going to be happy. I deserved to be alone and just so low. So I really hadn't ever heard anybody really talk about low self-esteem in their relationships yet. So I don't know. I just really identified with that. And I really appreciate both of you speaking so much and just your honesty. It always amazes me how different we all are, but how much I can relate to everybody's stories. And I'm super grateful to Oh My God. You guys were one of my first secular meetings ever, and I go every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Super thankful to Joe and Mikey for the meetings that they host as well. Joe, I've come to some of yours as well. Super chill, just always super welcoming. So thank you all so much. I'm about 75 days and going strong. So thank you so much. Appreciate
awesome. It. That's so fantastic. Thanks for checking in. Nathan, wouldn't be a meeting without a Nathan.
Hey, I'm Nathan. I'm an alcoholic. First, I want to thank Mikey and Andy and Jeremy for speaking today. I've gotten an opportunity this past year to get to know these guys, and the Oh My God group itself and the members of the group have really added to my recovery program, and it's given me a new home. So, I love that. I also love what was shared today, because there was a lot of talk about doing the actual work of this program, because it's really important, because we are Alcoholics Anonymous, we just happen to be doing it without magical thinking. And that's what that's what speaks to me, is that, we have a program, we have things that, we have goals, and we have things to do, some action to do. And it's nice to hear that stuff shared at a meeting. But hey, thank you for putting this on, Joe. This is pretty awesome. Thanks for letting me be here.
Awesome. Thanks for being on the ride with us. Terry, how you doing?
You need to unmute, Terry.
I had this meeting or this celebration on my mind, and then I had to do something else. I had to go out and take care of something. And so I'm very late, and I missed most of it. But nevertheless, I'm very happy to be here and be in the presence of other people. I really, really appreciate this. So I'm going to get myself to another meeting as soon as possible. And basically, that's it. I appreciate this so much. I really need it. I'll be honest. I'm not sober. I'm trying to get to that state, and it's pretty scary, but I'm doing it, I'm doing it. And I got the help of some doctors, a couple of doctors, but it's a little kind of weird, it's a little kind of, am I getting the right advice or not? I'm not sure, but today's better than yesterday. All right. I guess that's about it. Thank you very much for listening. It's great to see everybody, and to be in a space where I can see other faces, be in a common space. It's fantastic. All right, okay, that's it. Okay, thanks a lot. Okay,
good to see you. See thanks, you soon, Harry. Deborah B.
Hi, I am Deborah, your alcoholic California girl. Thank you, Mikey, Andy, and Jeremy. Great, great shares. I'm going to talk briefly about dealing with traditional meetings, because there were many times when I just didn't go because I had enough stress in my life and I didn't need one more stressful thing. And post-Zoom, when Zoom started, someone asked me to share at a traditional meeting and said, step meeting, said, it's a big meeting. There'll be, you know, 75, 90 people. And I said, yes, without thinking about it, right? Because that's what we do. And then the answer was, all right, it's step three. And Mikey, I thought, oh my God, what have I just gotten myself into? So thinking about it briefly, I tried something I never tried before. As I started, I said, well, as you know, AA is a program of rigorous honesty. So I need to tell you that I am an agnostic, and I will try my best to tell you my interpretation of the third step. Since then, I have tried that in any number of meetings, and it has reduced the friction that I've had in traditional meetings. Usually it just shuts people up, because anybody who's been around the rooms know it's a program of rigorous honesty. So it's great. And oh my God, I'm so thankful for all the people who've started meetings where I don't have to explain that at the beginning. Thank you.
Awesome. Great to have you here. From next month's host meeting, it's Russell from Cape Town. Still muted.
What an amateur move. Oh my God. Hi, Joe, and I'm Russell, alcoholic addict and just general fuck up in Cape Town. And just loving to be in a room full of junkies. Just feel so at home with you guys. Jeremy, your share is absolutely spot on for me. So much to relate to. And Mikey, I've got a similar travels about starting my own group over here, which sounds like we shared some similar problems. And Andy, thank you for your share. So just hope that we're going to see you guys next month. And as we're hoping to host this meeting in Cape Town. It's awesome down here. And if you ever get a chance to visit after the craziness stops, come and say hi. Because Cape Town's great. Just wanted to say thanks for the meeting and thanks for the shares. And thanks to Joe for getting all this stuff going, man. Great job.
Thank you very much. I did get some notes that some of the links I passed around were missing a three. So you'll meet people that said, hey, I tried to get to the meeting. What happened? This guy, blame this guy. Tell people to talk to this guy, and for Cape Town, we'll get it right. So try to give us, tell them to try to give us one more chance. Anyone else for last closing comments? Great. Okay. Cyril, come on down.
Thank you, Joe. My name's Cyril and I'm an alcoholic calling in from London. Thanks so much, Mikey and Jeremy and where's my other friend, Andy, for everything that you shared. It's really wonderful. I discovered Zoom, Secular AA, like all of us, in the last 12 months. And I can't tell you how thrilled to bits I am. I feel completely liberated by having found Secular AA, having been an atheist really from the age of sort of 15, and been in AA for sort of, getting on for 30 years before I found Secular. Now, don't get me wrong, like every people has shared, it's not about God bashing, and traditional AA saved my life, and I'm thrilled to bits with it. My life is 1,000,000% different from what it was when I was drinking, and I met some wonderful, wonderful people in there. But I am a free thinker, and I never felt completely at ease in traditional AA meetings, except when I did a chair, I would take a deep breath and say, I'm a passionate atheist and a passionate recovering alcoholic in AA, and both those things are not mutually exclusive. And you could hear a pin drop most of the time. You really, really could, unfortunately. And that's why I felt uncomfortable, because AA, like any other organization, operates within social norms. And I didn't want to upset the newcomer. I didn't want to sort of freak people out or feel that people thought I was being disrespectful to them or anything like that. But I never felt complete. And then along came secular meetings in London, and I started going on to those, and it was completely liberating. I knew, and I know that every free thinking meeting that I go to, I can just be myself, absolutely speak from the heart. And when I speak from the heart, that's when my day and my recovery and my sobriety is at its best. I feel inhibited if I have to sort of really measure my words for the benefit of other people. And as an atheist, I've got to say that words like God and higher power and even spirituality, the way AA uses it, is not in my vocabulary. It just is not. And most of us, when we come in to stop drinking, feel that we have to sort of get our heads around this God concept stuff. And I know from my personal experience, also I was a social worker all my life as well, my experience is it's far and away the single biggest reason why people don't stay in AA. And that's my passion, because our responsibility statement tells us, doesn't it, that I'm responsible, you know, for anyone who needs the help, it's got to be there. So I just love secular AA to bits. And before I close, I'll just give a bit of plug. I saw it in the chat. Yes, Europe are hosting the next ICSSAA conference in June. And I do urge you to sort of put the date in your diary. In the UK, by the way, we're doing a lot of work with Geoffrey Munn's book, The Staying Sober Without God, The Practical 12 Steps. And if anybody hasn't come across it yet, I thoroughly urge you to have a look at it. There are loads of versions around. But again, I found it so thrilling to find an alternative set of 12 steps, which are practical and useful and thoughtful and grown up and intellectual and achievable, all these good things which we need in the 21st century. So live and let live is my philosophy. For folks who get on with traditional and have got a concept of God and a higher power, good luck to you all. But that absolutely will never, never, never include me. And I feel so, so at home in secular AA. And my goodness me, this ability to sort of press a button and see people around the world is just absolutely thrilling, more than I can say. So it's lovely to connect with you all, and hope to see you all again very soon. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Cyril. Looking forward to the June Solstice conference. Dave, Tristan, and Max. Dave, come on down.
Hi, my name is Dave. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Jeremy. And thank you, Andy, for your sharing it and everyone else who shared. I'm completely new to secular AA, and I have the same sense of relief and elation of I'm not alone that I got when I came into regular recovery, which I have been doing for 14 plus years. And like lots of people have said, it saved my life. My life's a million times better, but I've been sort of limiting my parameters to fit in, you know, because I'm respectful and thoughtful of others. I don't want to bash my disbelief against their belief, you know? So it's really good. I feel like I've found my people at last, and it's just such an exhalation of breath. And I liked Deborah's talking that thing of, you know, even in regular, I'm a secretary at a regular, like a really well-established Zoom meeting. And it's popular because it's very open. But I'm, you know, that's all coming out from heart, passion and heart, but still they want to read the, you know, things that don't fit with me. I'm not going to go on about it. I'm just really love that I found you guys. I was at my first secular meeting yesterday. This is the second one today. I got a local one. I'm in Ireland, got a local one a couple of hours ago, and I had found that you guys were once first Sunday, and I thought I got to show up and see these good people. So I feel really great that I found you guys. Thank you all so much. It doesn't matter if you're in a day in secular AA, a day, or for the past 30 years, you guys were here ready and waiting for when I got here. So thank you for that.
Welcome. We're all here because we're not all there. Speaking of which, Tristan, how are you doing?
Thanks for that intro, Joe. I'm Tristan. I'm sober today, and I have a desire to stay sober. And it looks like I missed the party. I just got here, and it's almost over. I didn't wear a Hawaiian shirt, but I do have a ukulele. This is my second meeting today, so I feel much better. A lot of things in my life are up in the air and unresolved, and you know, I have a lot of potential for you know, unpleasantness. But I'm sober today, and I feel like I'm going to get through the day, which is better. That's better than yesterday. So you know, so I'm grateful. And I'm hanging in there.
Thanks for the tunes. Max, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. I'm Max. I'm an alcoholic. Very happy to be here. Joe, thank you for putting this together. Mikey, thank you for creating Oh My God. And Jeremy and Andy, thank you for sharing today. I wanted to briefly comment on some of the stuff that was shared, which was fantastic. I'll share that, I was, you know, president of the Campus Atheist Society back when I was in college, and I was a royally, very pretentious asshole as well. I very much had a chip on my shoulder, and as my drinking got worse, I did start, you know, going to AA meetings because people told me to, and even though my life sucked and was getting worse, I thought that as long as I didn't believe in God and, like, say I was an alcoholic, then I was better than those people in there. As long as I even, like, I was drinking my ass off, things sucked, but as long as I didn't say I'm an alcoholic, then I was better than everybody who did. And eventually I decided, like, things got really, really bad. And so I heard some aphorism, which sucked, a slogan, if you will. And the slogan that I heard was fake it till you make it. And I decided that I was gonna fake believing in God until I made it. So I said all the prayers, held hands with everybody, you know, said prayers in public. My sponsor at the time was having me, like, lead prayers at Dunkin' Donuts. And I thought that was very intense, but I figured I'd try it because it worked for him. But eventually that just turned into me making sober sounding noises. And I figured that that's all I really had to do. And so, but eventually I also figured out that if I could fake believing in God, then I could might as well just fake not drinking either. So that didn't work out too well. Eventually, I did wash up at our mostly agnostic group of drunks. The day that I decided to quit drinking for good was I found myself a block away and an hour away from my first Oh My God meeting. So that's the closest thing to an act of God that I'm willing to admit to. But ever since then, it's been great because, like I said, I've connected with people who think the way I think, care about the things that I care about, and think and, you know, value the same things I do. So with that, I will say, Andy and Jeremy, I think you both also are pretentious assholes, and I'm very glad that both of you are, because I'm glad that there are people like me here so that I can, you know, be with people who value good arguments. That's how I choose to think about it. Some of us value good arguments so much that we get paid to win them like Andy does. So, so that's it. Just wanted to say, hey, love you guys. Glad y'all exist. Glad y'all are doing this. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. Asshole.
Yeah, a lot of people have to be credited for getting this off the ground. This International Conference of Secular AA thing started from a couple of people in California who didn't know enough. Hey, we can do this. And this is what it's become. So for those of you who wish, feel free to unmute and properly let's thank Mikey and Andy and Jeremy for being here today.
Hey. Thank you, Mikey. Hey.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Hey.
I don't know how.
Thank you.
Awesome. I'm going to end recording, but by all means, we'll leave the room open if people want to chat.
I'm going to say goodnight, guys.